Good morning. For the weekend that's in it, the Kilfenora Ceilidh Band. Live from Studio 8 for the D'Arcy, the Kilfenora Ceilidh Band, and we are shamelessly decked out in the green, Kelly, Moss, Olive, and of course, Emerald, flinging around the Begaras and the Begobs.
Sure, we're great altogether. But it is all about the parades, of course, this weekend, and waterboarding the shamrock in the towns and villages across the land. Support your local parade, by the way, in your village, the towns. The regional ones are always the really edgy ones. But what will this year's parade parodies be? It's been very, very quiet, you see, you know. Probably a few little Kate Middletons, you'd expect, finally being discovered on the back of a high ace or a restaging the photoshopped family image on the back of a flatbed lorry. That's what St. Patrick's Day is all about. There will definitely, we'll be expecting little Oppenheimers with Oscars in Cork and probably RT material. Let's face it, there'll be RT material. I don't want to give anyone any last minute ideas, but you know, a silage trailer featuring a Marty party filled with flip-flops being pulled by a Renault seems appropriate.
Cunus. In terms of the news agenda this week, it really was all about the shockwaves reverberating from that referendum result. From yes, yes, to no, no.
Some of the front pages first. For Adker, we failed public on referendum. The Mer kicking the ballots. The Irish Mail on Sunday walloped. The Sunday Times says embarrassing defeat won't force election vows, Taoiseach.
Oh, I think we get the picture. But just in case you're in any doubt as to the depth of feeling on this one, here's just one voice from outside a polling station.
I am going to vote no, but I am going to vote no because I will not vote for woolly-minded window dressing.
And she wasn't the only one. On Monday's Liveline, more no-no voters.
I am absolutely furious at the disconnect that there is between our politicians and the general public. There was no imperative for this whatsoever. It was foisted on people. There was a very clear slant in a direction given to people that we were not cool if we didn't vote in the right direction. Well, clearly people have come back and said, this is not the way we want Irish society to move. Where is the responsibility for this? And why has 30 million been wasted on this?
And all week long, analysis. Here's John Downing of the Irish Independent on Morning Ireland.
It was a mess from start to finish. Well-intentioned, but poorly executed.
Nothing if not pity. And Taoiseach Leo Varadkar would acknowledge that it was, in his words, a significant defeat and one that they would reflect on in the weeks ahead. And it would turn out that even members whose party had campaigned for yes, yes, went into the privacy of the voting booth and went against the party line. Step up Fianna Fáil Senator Lisa Chambers with Cormac. She'd voted no, no. She'd had concerns. But had she raised any of these with the higher-ups?
Did you discuss this with the leader, Micheál Martin, before the vote?
No, I didn't. I kind of didn't really engage in the campaign or debates because I just wasn't sure where I was going on it. And I think a lot of colleagues would have been the same, to be honest. It was a very short campaign.
You didn't campaign at all. Were you asked to campaign?
I have been asked to go on different debates and I didn't because I didn't want to advocate a particular position and debate and argue against points that I wasn't comfortable with myself.
And did
but
you
also,
make that clear?
I was very conscious. No, well, I just declined to go on. I didn't get into a big debate about it. But I was very conscious that my party was advocating for a yes vote, as were the government, and as were all of the opposition parties. So, to be honest, I thought maybe I'm completely out of step with everybody else.
She would later confirm that she had, in fact, campaigned on one occasion anyway for a yes-yes vote. Other government TDs who had voted no-no, Fianna Fáil's Willie O'Dea, Eamon O'Queeve and John McGuinness. And then, half and half, for Fianna Fáil TD Niamh Smith. She'd voted yes in the care and family referendums, but then no on the care amendment, despite canvassing for yes-yes in both referendums. Nothing if not an interesting week. And all grist to the mill for Oliver Callan.
Welcome along to the 2:40 here at Cheltenham. They're lining up for an old favourite, the blame game referendum stakes double. Always an Irish winner in this one. Who could forget We All Partied, the legendary victor in 2009. Attorney General's advice is the favourite today, and I'm sorry we're just out of touch, is a non-runner. And they're off. Make Them Vote Again has taken an early lead, just a nose out in front of Lackluster Campaign. Make Them Vote Again, though, seems to have gone out a bit early. I see Lisa Chambers is unsteady on Yes Yes. A bit of hesitancy there from Lisa Chambers. She's having a good look around her before going on. Blame Roderick is in the lead now. Blame Roderick under a heavy whip from Leo Varadkar's stable. He had two horses in this one. Blame Roderick and I'm Not Their Mammy. Unusually ridden by two senators, that one, but neither have shown up today. Saying One Thing But Doing Another is in and around the middle there. Hard to see who's on that. Oh, it's Lisa Chambers as well. My word. She's hoping to win by riding two horses. Interesting tactic there. Attorney General's Advice is a faller. It's a faller. Hit the ditch. There's a lot of angry punters on that one. Coming up on the inside, it's Woke Gallery Greens, ridden by Willie O'Dea. You Willie O'Dea usually seen riding Perfect Hindsight. Perfect Hindsight hasn't been seen in a while, but it's Woke Gallery Greens there. Ivana Batchik is gaining ground now. She's got all her hopes on Lackluster Campaign. She doesn't look like her heart is in it, though. She's pulled up. She's pulled up. Lackluster Campaign is hoping no one has spotted her. It's Blame Roderick. Woke Gallery Greens saying one thing but doing another. Way, way out the back is Mary Lou. Very quiet there on Nothing to Do with Me. Yes, Yes has gone down. That's a bad fall for Lisa Chip. Lisa Chambers, though, still in the races. Still in the race, making a move on Saying One Thing But Doing Another. She didn't expect to be still in it, but all the others have slowed down, and by accident now she's going to win this by a head. Lisa Chambers couldn't make up her mind there, and so she is the winner on Saying One Thing But Doing Another, and will be in the parade ring as the winner of the Blame Game Referendum Stakes Double. The 240 here at Cheltenham, brought to you by our big bet partners, don'tmentionaddiction.com.
Oh, he's a bad man. Callum's kicks. It is Shachtan na Gaeilge. Less of a Shachtan, mind you, than a Caithness Plus, but we will not split hairs, because if ever the Gaeilge was having a moment, it is now. And if you are bemoaning your lack of the Teanga, don't come a queener to this man, or even mention the dead language argument.
Oh, you can't be asking me questions like that and expect me to keep a PG. Yeah, I think that's a questionable opinion to have publicly.
That is Cian O'Grifa, who loves his Irish and who pushed back hard on any of your Peg Sarah's trauma from school.
I don't get why people feel the need to like bring up their school trauma. Like, the language is a lot more than a school subject. Like, I hated maths in school. I've never felt the need to like sit down a mathematician and tell them that.
Yeah, we have a whole generation after generation who, you know, were force-fed Irish, I suppose, and as a result rebelled against that. That's a reality for a lot of people.
But do you not think it's the same for every school subject? Like, I had no interest in half the stuff I had to learn.
Yeah, I know, but there's no sort of geography lobby or, you know, it's completely different. This is a national thing. It's our national tongue. People are very emotional about it, as opposed to science or, you know.
Yeah, fair.
I've never met anybody who got passionate about an Oxbow Lake.
As geography nerds everywhere bristle. But as a gay man, Cian felt it was a little bit easier to come out os Gaeilge.
You claim it's a big generalisation, Cian, but they are tend to be more accepting than the wider community.
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like, I mean, there's a couple of aspects to it. A lot of people that I went to college with would have picked Irish as a college subject because they were intending on going into teaching, and that, I mean, maybe this is a sweeping statement, but tends to be women or gay men. Right. And the occasional footballer that just wants the easy days. Don't sue me for that. But yeah, I think that mixed with a lot of people seem to like discriminate against the Irish language for some reason. And I think people who kind of experience
discrimination
yes, are more yes. open-minded to yeah. the ostracised within
the marginalised. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting thought. Cian O'Grifa with Ray. And in case you are wondering, here's Bláthain de Burca with Oliver.
We have Aoroch anyway.
We have Aoroch, which is gay.
Gay, yeah.
But I think a lot of these words we are kind of modernising and using. Like, it's galvanised now at this stage, where it's kind of like we can kind of cross-pollinate with the different words. But I like Atach. Atach. Because I like it a lot because it sounds similar to Ashtach, which means strange. But Atach would be queer. So
it's a nice, lovely word.
Yeah, exactly. Wayward.
Everything just sounds nicer, Asquith, doesn't it?
I think so.
You're being unchivalrous. Yes, I'm very good at hearing a nice word.
Then. It's beautiful.
Now, Oliver was talking to Bláthnaid about her programme, The Irish for Sex. So, posture alert. You might be in the mood for embracing the physical and expanding the old vocab, or maybe you just don't fancy getting all up in the biological business at this relatively early hour. Because it is all about this.
Sexy talk with fodders.
Bear it in mind. We are starting with a word count.
Moncal McGann, people will be familiar with the book. It was the 32 words for field he discovered. I think there's 50 words for penis, 10 for vagina.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you have all these words for field, very few for female genitalia. That's kind of the history of Ireland and women in a single sentence.
Yeah,
is it
yeah.
Not?
But when it comes to certain lady parts, Fader said to Coy, this was quite descriptive.
Buttock Bjogan Vat Avata was one of the phrases.
I think that's the one that means the little man in the boat. Isn't it?
Little old man.
The little old man in the boat. And that was the clitoris. In my mind, the image it conjures up is a man working very hard, which isn't necessarily my experience, but...
I said it was a Scottish reference as well, so maybe it's just about how hard it is to find a little old man in a boat. Is that where that comes from?
It could have been.
Ribbing and chivorous.
I was just about to say.
Beautiful word.
I love it, because chivorous is definitely full of joy, but there's also a bit of madness to it. It's a bit of a...
Makes sense.
Send you crazy.
So it's kind of the... Was grassy strands or a particular tuft? Is that what the ribbing...
Exactly. Ribbing. And of course, ribbing does just mean ribbon, but the way that it was meant then, yeah, would have been... Again, all of these are really, really associated with nature, so, and the landscape and things like that, which makes sense.
That does make sense.
With Ireland,
That's what we're doing most of the time, was out of doors.
Bláthnaid de Burka with Oliver. Meanwhile, with Claire, more Irish words. Words that were beautifully descriptive and sounded absolutely lovely.
Schlimpini is a lovely one. So, you know, they say that the Germans have a word for everything, but Schlimpini is a word that means dancing speckled light, like you might see on the sea in front of you, you know.
Isn't that perfect?
It's gorgeous, yeah. It's
kind onomatopoeic.
Yeah, it is. And there were so many onomatopoeic words, actually.
That's Cathal Billings from UCD's School of Irish with words that would make you want to dig deep into your brain for all the Gaeilge. And this you will like, particularly if you're mad for porridge or have a chubby little baby.
Plubberucht, which the root is plub, so P-L-O-B. And plubberucht is what you'd use to describe baby talk or babble. But clubuch is an adjective and it describes being fat-cheeked like a baby.
Oh, lovely.
And a Blubogue is a little small chubby thing, is how you might describe a fat chubby baby. But then blubbernuch is the Irish word for the noise porridge makes when it's boiling. So there's that blub, blub, blub.
That's amazing. Kind of.
And if those words sit snugly in your ear, well, these work on a more visual, visceral level.
Smugurlia rowan is the Irish for jellyfish, but when you look at its elements, smugurlia is spit or phlegm or spittle, and rowan is obviously a seal, so seal spit is
nice.
The basis for jellyfish. You can kind of see the link, you know, the texture and the look on the side of the beak. Even on a more kind of serious note, even as regards the animals, like from an ecological point of view, you know, with such attention that we're always kind of hearing about habitat destruction, like Irish can kind of make us more aware of the habitat of these creatures, like,
yes.
You know, a heron is just a heron, maybe in English it doesn't mean much, but cur reisk, so cur is a long pointed thing like the beak, and reisk is the Irish for a marsh or a swamp. So, you know, it suggests cur reisk suggests where the animal lives and where it comes from and where it thrives. And it's the same with carc freig, which is carc is a hen and freach is heather. So, you know, without the heather, you don't have the grouse.
Cathal Billings of UCD with Claire. But we will finish with the king of Gaeilge, Moncal McGann, over on Lyric.
On Dehu Law, the Hachta na Gaeilge, the tenth day of Shachta na Gaeilge. Focal Hjol on Leonov Na, today's music word is Durud. It means a buzz, or a murmur, or a hum, or a drone, or any deep sound, Durud. It also means a bass singing voice.
Agashkim namna
Dorod Bach is a drone of bees. Dorod Dav is the bellowing of stags. Dorod Mara is the murmuring of the sea. Dorod can also be a chant, a deep plaintive chant. Dorod Nmuruach is the mermaid's chant. Undorod Feina is the chant of the Fianna warriors in the woodland chasing deer. But Dorod Nahiha is something else entirely. Dorod Nahiha is a military tattoo, a signal on a drum or a bugle for soldiers or sailors to go to their quarters at night. Dorod, Togagi Live Shin, take that one with you. A buzz, a murmur, a hum or a drone. Dorod.
Back in a bit. Welcome back. On Tuesday morning, this was the headline for the 10 o'clock news.
The former RT journalist Charlie Bird has died at the age of 74. He was a familiar face to many over the years, known for his coverage of major news stories and in later years, his campaigns to raise awareness of motor neuron disease.
A fitting lead story for a man who had spent his life in journalism. And so many people paid tribute to his work and his campaigning. On the News at One, colleagues Sean O'Rourke and Brian Dobson spoke about Charlie Bird's dogged determination.
He had that great capacity to connect with people on a human level.
And that tenacity, that determination to succeed was there right from the beginning, because as he often said, he didn't get his leaving cert. His prospects as a school leaver, he would have admitted, were pretty poor. He didn't have connections in the media. He wasn't somebody who was going to have an easy path into journalism or perhaps anything that he turned his hand to. And yet he made it happen for himself.
Yes, helped, I think, by his contact. I think it was a lounge boy in Charlie Chalk's pub with people like Brandon O'Heher and Owen Harris, and indeed I think Donald Foley got him in. He was the news editor of the Irish Times, and his first foot on the rung on the ladder was in the library of the Irish Times, and he just took it from there. And I think Harris brought him into RT as a researcher, and then he worked his way through programmes, ultimately ending up as a news reporter in the early 1980s. I met him first, our paths first crossed. I came in here just from the Sunday Press I think it was 1982, it was the time of the big snow, the famous Michael O'Leary snow, it was called. The country was at a standstill, and Charlie was heading off to get into an Air Corps helicopter to cover the story from the sky. Quick handshake, a smile, I kind of knew I had a friend for life.
Yeah. And as a presenter, you in this chair in times past and on other programmes, and certainly I can say the same thing in programmes I've presented, when Charlie Bird was on the story, you knew you were going to get it.
Absolutely. But not only that, Brian, when Charlie Bird was in the building, I felt, and our desks were close by each other, if Charlie was in the house, you kind of knew you were safe in the sense that you weren't going to miss anything. Charlie, I think he added maybe 10% to the quality of our programmes, whether he was on them or not himself. For this reason, he would come in and he'd say, what are you doing? Have you thought about? And he would inevitably think of something obvious that maybe nobody else had got around to thinking about. And yes, he was dogged. He once described himself as being like a dog with a bone. I mean, and there are numerous examples of that.
And it was with fellow RT journalist George Lee that he would break one of the biggest stories of his career. George spoke to Claire, and you can hear the shock in his voice at the loss of his colleague.
George, yourself and Charlie very famously worked together on that huge National Irish Bank story back in 1998, and you wrote the book Breaking the Bank too. You were very sad to hear the news this morning, I know.
I think it was quite shocked, actually, because I didn't expect it. The reason, probably, you know, we heard Charlie a lot of late. We'd hear his voice, which would come across on that machine, which was his younger voice. And so I heard him 2 weeks ago, I think it was, or less than 2 weeks ago, on with Brendan O'Connor.
Yeah.
And he was speaking with the voice, the machine, and it sounds so young. And so you hear him, and we heard him so often, and he didn't seem, when you hear the voice, anything other than that younger, vibrant Charlie Bird. And we all knew he was very unwell, but I don't think I knew that it would happen that quick, so it has come as a shock.
And he recalled their working together to uncover the scandal around corrupt practices and tax evasion at National Irish Bank.
One thing which became clear to me was what it was about Charlie and what it is about Charlie. Charlie is relentless. Charlie always was relentless, but Charlie had this ordinariness to him, which was a disarming ordinariness insofar as, and then you can see that and you can hear that from the way the people respond to him and react to him. And it was, but he had this absolutely enormous drive for a story. Charlie would wear out his shoes about every 2 months. Mine would last for years because Charlie never sat still. He had this worry bead in his hand, and that drive, and that was his, was part of his commitment, and that's why so much got done, with that sense that he was an ordinary person. He used to go around saying, "I'm just a working journalist," but I'm afraid I think Charlie Bird was a lot more than that.
You told a great story at the book launch back in 1998, which I was reading back over. You were in, I think it was in Boswell's meeting, Contact, and you were waiting for that person to arrive, and Charlie had 3 pints and you had 1, and you sort of said to him, "Listen, we need to keep our wits about us here." But yeah. Didn't he say to you, "Well, you can keep your wits about you and I'll work the man," which really goes back to the ordinariness of him, and that was him, what yeah. he was going to do.
George Lee with Claire. And as a young reporter, Charlie Bird had covered the Stardust disaster on Valentine's Night in 1981, the nightclub fire which killed 48 people. And he became involved with the families of Fight for Justice. On the line with Claire, Antoinette Keegan, campaigner and survivor whose 2 sisters died in that fire.
Antoinette, he never forgot you, and he never forgot the 48 people who died in the Stardust in 1981, did he?
He didn't, no, Claire. Good morning. He never forgot any of us, right? He was like part of our family. Like, he was always there supporting us. Like, even after my mother passed away in July 2020, he was one of the first people to ring me to pass the condolences over. He was very close to us all, and really close to my mother and myself. It was just devastating.
Can I just say to you my condolences to you, because I know how important Charlie was to you and to all of you in the Stardust campaign. He wasn't just a reporter who supported you. He was a friend, wasn't he?
Oh, he was a very special friend. Like, kept in contact through email. He actually rang me, which is what Tommy was saying there, about like when he was having difficulty. He rang me to say he's had to get 5 MRI scans done. And I said, "Charlie, he'd be okay. He'd be grand." I said, "They'll find out what's wrong." And then when he texted me then to tell me where it was, I actually didn't know where it was. I had to Google it. And then I started crying and I rang him. And I spoke to him on the phone. I said, "Charlie, is there anything at all that we can do to help you? Because you've always been there to help us." And he said, "Look," he said, "I don't think there's anything." And he kind of got very upset. But in fairness, Charlie's always been there. He actually travelled to Derry in August to see me up at the Bloody Sunday families. Mm-hmm. And he's been like, kind of like, he was a friend of my dad's before my dad passed away in 86. And then he came very close to my mother. And then when she passed away, he's always been there for us.
Yeah.
He's never failed us. In actual fact, he even read out a pen portrait of one of the victims at the inquest.
Antoinette Keegan with Claire. And later on Liveline, people remembered a man whose face and voice had been familiar in so many houses here over the past decades. Here's Paul.
Hello, Joe, and it's lovely to join you on today. I mean, when I was growing up, Joe, he was just such a constant voice in my home. Mm-hmm. And such a remarkable voice and such a remarkable name as well, let's be honest.
Yeah,
and he was, you know, every time you heard the voice, he had such great authority. And I was just thinking back over the stories, Joe. I mean, you grew up in the 80s and 90s in Ireland. The news environment was totally different to what it is now. I mean, you were reliant on RTE, you were reliant on maybe a small number of newspapers. And someone like Charlie Bird, he was a very, very important person in what you might call, I think, national life, for want of a better term. Okay. I mean, I can remember Joe at the 80s and 90s. I mean, the Troubles. I mean, he had such remarkable authority and people trusted him so much. And I think, to be honest with you, Joe, I think he understood the North and understood Northern politics very, very well. He managed to win the trust, of course, of the Provisional IRA. But I remember him breaking those stories, and I remember just how much people trusted him, Joe. And I think he just left a fantastic legacy.
Charlie Bird was diagnosed with motor neuron disease in 2021. And from that grew a campaign of awareness and fundraising that exceeded every expectation, culminating in Climb with Charlie for Pieta House and the MND Association, and his own journey up Kilpatrick. As CEO of the Irish Motor Neuron Disease Association, Lillian McGovern told Brian on the News at 1, Charlie Bird had grit and ambition.
I remember Charlie saying, if we raise 1 million, I'll be very, very happy.
But just like Charlie, once we knew that we'd hit a million, he wanted to raise two and then he wanted to raise three. So he was always upping the bar. He relied on the generosity and whatever that connection that was there with people when he went on the Late Late, it absolutely connected with people in a manner that we have never seen in terms of people coming forward from not only around Ireland, but internationally as well. And then when he knew he needed the big money, he said, right, Lil, we're off now to kind of find the big money for this. And I said, well, where are we going? He said, we're going to touch the people who have the money. And he just went in and asked. I mean, he just literally walked in and said, I need €20,000 for this. I need. And then he said, and she'll look after the detail. And
that's you.
So that was me. And they did. Nobody refused Charlie.
Nobody
refused Charlie Bird. Nobody. So I suppose the money that was raised, I mean, it was of huge significance to us. So, I mean, I say to our M&D community, we have managed to achieve in 1 year what would take us 5 years to raise money for.
From the News at One. And only a few weeks ago, he came into Brendan O'Connor for an interview. And it is on these words that we will finish.
I'm not afraid of dying. I have had a great life. As RTE chief news correspondent, I got to work on the biggest stories both home and abroad. I got to travel the world. I feel very privileged that my career in journalism took me to all these places. I always tell the same story. I failed every exam, never went to university, but I succeeded in my career. I am proud of that. I also have a wonderful family who have been by my side since my diagnosis. That helps me when I need support. I have come to terms with my illness, that it is terminal and there is nothing that I can do to change that. My view on life has completely changed. Live every day as if it was your last, and always extend the hand of friendship, no matter who they are. Every one of us will pass, so I want to extend the hand of friendship to anyone who is in a dark place. I have learned now to be truthful when answering questions, I speak always from the heart. I have a terminal illness and I know my death is just around the corner.
Charlie Bird, who died this week at the age of 74. Back in a bit. Welcome back. It's a week to celebrate the best of us, only the good stuff. But managing the national image, well, it has never been easy. Ardal O'Hanlon has a new documentary, The Geneva Window, Through a Glass Darkly. Back in 1923, stained glass artist Harry Clark was commissioned to create a gift to celebrate our joining of the League of Nations. 8 panels representing 15 writers. What an opportunity. Comely maidens. But for Harry Clark, oh, they were maidens all right, but more of the racy variety.
When it comes to this Geneva window, these weren't necessarily representations of the stories that he was inspired by. They were kind of his versions of those stories, Harry Clark's versions.
Yeah, yeah. They were jumping off points, I think, for Harry's imagination. You know, and he started off innocently enough. You'll note in the first panel and the second panel. I mean, the first panel is The Wayfarer by Padraig Pearce, so no one's going to object to that. Mm. The second panel is It's St. Joan by George Bernard Shaw.
Yeah.
Like, again, no one's going to object to that. So, like, it's like he was hoping the government and the senior civil servants wouldn't look beyond the first couple of panels. Because as you go down the window, you come across the Liam O'Flaherty piece. Now, by this time, by the time he actually presented the window, Liam O'Flaherty was very much on the banned list. The Censorship of Publications Act had come into being, and Liam O'Flaherty was a big thorn in the side of the government, a critic of the government. I mean, I think he described them as gombeen men. You know, he was one of many writers, I suppose, who was very disappointed with what happened after the War of Independence. So it's not just the fact that O'Flaherty's represented at all. I think that was one of their big objections. It's the fact that the panel that he chose, you know, features this very lecherous man, Mr. Gilhooly, who's ogling a naked girl dancing in front of him. He's got a cigar in one hand, he's got a glass of champagne in the other, and his large belly is protruding through his unbuttoned shirt, you know. So, like, this is not how the government wanted Ireland to be represented in Geneva.
The window would be rejected by the Irish state. Not quite the look. It is now in a museum in Florida. But a fascinating story. Meanwhile, if you like the horses, you'll have loved this week at Cheltenham.
Fight hard because Romeo Killio is battling back really late. But on the hands of Patrick Collins,
Festival.
And that was the 100th win for trainer Willie Mullins, made all the sweeter because it was his son Patrick who took Jasmine DeVoe across the finish for the champion bumper.
I'm very privileged to get the 100 for my father. That's a special moment, yeah.
The number of winners, particularly in recent seasons, and the dominance of the stable, you're really well positioned to tell us what makes your dad so special.
I always bring it back to when the Giggins Salmon split happened and we lost the biggest owner in racing and a third or a quarter of our horses, and instead of, you know, in his early 60s, instead of him consolidating and maybe finishing second or third, he went out and he got more owners, more horses, more staff, more problems, and got bigger because of it. And I think if that hadn't happened, we mightn't be where we are right now either. He's always chopping and changing things. He's never standing still. He can't be told no. I remember when David Casey got his appendix out, he couldn't fly down to Melbourne. So Willie said, well, can we get him there by land? To Melbourne? Like, who else would even, Alec? And it's that kind of thinking, you know. It's outside the box. It's a bit, at times, it can be like the man from the moon, but enough of it works.
From Thursday's Morning Ireland and all of that before yesterday's Gold Cup win. Downright greedy. And this jockey wasn't short of a headline or two herself.
It's Slade Steel who led Mystical Power over the last, but it's Mystical Power who is the best away. Mystical Power on the near side for Mark Walsh. The far side, Slade Steel for Rachel Blackmore. And Slade Steel, it is her fine notes. Slade Steel wins the Supreme. Rachel Blackmore, Henry de Blomhead and Rob Kerr.
It's Rachel time again.
Yeah, I was always travelling. I didn't really want to be in front jumping the last, but he kind of took me there and he battled back so well after the last.
Captain Guinness and Rachel Blackmore all out. Gentleman Demays just a length away, but Captain Guinness is the winner of the champion chase. Rachel Blackmore does not care. It's yet another big race to come her way.
Yeah, the legend. We can definitely call her a legend if we had any difficulty calling her a legend before this. Rachel Blackmore. She has now won the one big trophy at Cheltenham that has eluded her, the Champion Chase. The 34-year-old Tipperary woman has now won the Champion Hurdle at Cheltenham, the Gold Cup, the Champion Chase, and of course she's a Grand National winner.
Ooh, Greg Allen on Drive Time. Also, a pretty good week for this man. And the Oscar goes to Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer and pupils there at St. Anthony's Primary School at Ballinlock in Cork, his old school. Here is Principal Sean Lyons with Brian.
This morning when the boys came in, the atmosphere, the energy, the feel good feel factor around the school, it was just so positive to see the boys bounce in, a pep in their step. And even at the door this morning, the younger boy said to me, Mr. Lyons, did I sit in Killian's seat? Did he walk through this door? Just a real awe and a real, I suppose, celebration of what this achievement is. It's historical, it's monumental, and it's remarkable to think, look, that I suppose he came here from the area Ballintemple, Ballinlock, and just to show that hard work, determination, talent, the will to really achieve and go for your goal when you're there, that you can really reach the height. And just to see him receive the Oscar, to be so humble, Brian, and to be so respectful and to be so grounded at the highest point of his career was just a testament of a remarkable role model for everyone.
And did we mention he's from Cork? Well, it didn't take much for Brian O'Connell to push this one.
What was it about it, do you think, that has won him so many awards?
No, his intensity. He's just, when he's in the part. Everything he puts into it, just heart and soul. And then I read a lot about what he'd done to prepare for it, on the set and off the set. And I said, pure graft. And being from Cork, of course, always makes it much better.
I was wondering when you'd get to the Cork pitch, yeah, go on.
To throw it in. So I'm very proud. I think he's a lovely guy, great family man, and he's a very sensible guy. He doesn't get carried away, but a great actor.
Kind of unusual for a Cork fella, isn't it?
No. We're very well balanced.
And by the way, Poor Things, produced by our own Element Pictures, took home 4 Oscars, including Best Actress for Emma Stone. Ed Gainey spoke to Morning Ireland from one of the parties, although it must be said, a very quiet corner.
How significant has tonight, indeed, how significant has the entire awards season been for Element?
I mean, the thing about the awards is they kind of give a film visibility and they give it a kind of, they kind of sanction it for audiences. So when For instance, when we had the 11 nominations, we went from 500 screens to 2,500 screens. And now that we've had these wins this weekend, we're now out on kind of digital platforms like Hulu and Apple and all that kind of stuff. So it'll just power the response to the film and the kind of, you know, people downloading the movie and buying the movie. So it has a huge impact. But actually, I suppose maybe more importantly for us, it's a reputational thing. In other words, the film gets cemented as a film that, you know, hopefully people will remember in years to come, and people will continue to find it over time. And that's, I guess, why we do these things, is we want to make something that people know about and continue to watch over time.
And as for Killian, well, the most Irish of references.
He said to me, it's a bit like Italian 90, isn't it? And I said, yeah, maybe it is. I don't know.
So many reasons to roll yourself up in the red carpet and greet the dawn with a statuette in one hand and a glass of warm fizz in the other. However, you are contractually obliged, yes, obliged to do this.
If you've won the Oscar, you do have to go to the governor's ball first, because the Oscars come without any inscription on it to make sure that the awards are so secret throughout the night. So you have to go to the governor's ball to get your inscription. So everybody goes there first. And then after that, they kind of spill out to the other parties then.
So like, do they have to queue up with their Oscars to get the inscription, or...
The queue is small enough given there's only a certain amount, but you have to go. And I think the Governor's Ball is really the prestigious, you know, that you only get to go there really if you've won an Oscar on the night. So Cillian Murphy would have gone there himself last night. Now,
that's a C-I-L-L, no, not a K. Ali Ryan of Goss Media there on Drive Time. But in all of this, spare a thought for Daniel Day. Joanne McNally joined Ray.
I was kind of surprised. I know we have had Irish Oscars. I know Brenda Fricker won one. And I know Daniel Day-Lewis, who's now been kind of tossed out, hasn't he? Now that we know he's English born. Everyone's very aware of that from today. They're like, oh, what about Daniel? Oh, he's English born. Oh, grand. Doesn't count then. Yeah. Is he? But I'd say he's seething somewhere, wherever he is.
How quickly we forget. It is a ruthless business. But if you are an actor, when the phone rings, hop, skip and jump. For Steve Wall, it was a case of get on a plane. You're in Dune 2. Fantastic. Time maybe to watch Dune 1.
I got a call on a Wednesday morning basically saying, would you be free to go to Budapest tonight? And like, it was like 11 a.m. on a Wednesday morning. Could you go to Budapest?
Yeah. And you're the head of the army, the Emperor's army.
The Sadakar. Yeah. You know what I mean, it's a sort of cameo almost.
Well,
it's
a very significant scene that you're in.
It's a significant scene. It's a big scene. Yeah. It took about 5 days to shoot that.
At least you know shooting it, they can't cut this scene from the film.
I had a feeling.
Because everybody is in the scene.
Yeah, everyone's in it. And it would have been very hard to cut me out, you know. And I actually had no idea, like, who was in this film. I knew nothing about it. Well, actually, I hadn't even seen the first one at that point. Mm. But that night, I actually, in the hotel room, I managed to find it online and I watched it just in case Denise said to me. The night before shooting.
Seat of the pants, which is maybe why they call it acting. And over 5 days, he shot a scene with some seriously big names.
The day I arrived, there was a like costume fitting and then makeup and hair consultation and all that. Then they brought me in to the massive soundstage to meet Denis. And he was so nice. He came up to me and he said, Steve, thank you for coming at such short notice. He says, you have saved my life.
That's what he said.
And I said, I bet you say that to all the boys. I did.
And then he says,
I'd like to come over and I'll introduce you to the cast in your scene. And that's when my jaw kind of hit the floor. Well, I tried to not make that obvious.
Because this is a secret to you, is it, up until this
I had no
moment?
Idea who I'd be meeting. So we walked over and there was like Christopher Walken.
Florence Pugh is
Florence
in the scene.
Pugh, Austin
Stefan
Butler,
Skarsgård.
Stellan Skarsgård, Dave Bautista. They were all there and I was like, oh, and there was a, hi, Steve.
But all of this, gentle listener, as a context for when Steve Wall put the come hither on Christopher Walken.
He tended to kind of stand on his own. I think people had been told, crew and all, just leave him alone, you know. So he was kind of standing there. They were shooting from the other angle and we weren't needed. And so I thought, how will I break the ice? And I thought, you know, did you ever see the Saturday Night Live sketch, More Cowbell?
Yes, yeah,
when
yeah.
he plays the record producer
yeah.
And they're recording the Don't Fear the Reaper by the Blue Oyster Cult. It's a hilarious sketch. And he always wants the cowbell louder. And so I walked up to him and he was standing there and I could see he knew there was someone standing beside him. And I quoted him one of his lines from More Cowbell. I said, like every man, I put my pants on in the morning one leg at a time. But when I put my pants on, I make hit records. And he just
yeah, I can't believe you do this. Do you put on that voice and everything?
I did his voice. Well, I can't really do his voice very well. But he just turned slowly. He looked at me and he said, "That sketch has come back to haunt me," he said, with this withered look. I was like, oh, my God. So I tried to make light of it, you know. It was like, oh, God, that didn't go well. And then he said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "I'm from Ireland." And he said, "I did a movie there." And I realised he was talking about Wild Mountain Thyme.
Yeah, not his proudest moment. Like,
not his proudest moment. No, and then, but at least there was the link. I'd worked with Emily Blunt just previously. So I worked with Emily Blunt.
Very good.
I worked with Emily Blunt and I kind of thought that would bring me up in his estimation. And he said, she was the star of that movie, you know. And but he said it in such a way that it's like she was the star and I wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
He said it in a funny way. And I said, it was shot in Mayo. I said, did you like Mayo? And he said, knitwear.
Knitwear.
He just came out with knitwear. And I was like, knitwear. Nice knitwear, he said.
The knitwear of Mayo.
An anecdote for life. But you've got to take a moment here and hand it to the cowbells on Steve Wall. Not a man to slink away quietly. He went out walking again.
About 2 days later, I made another attempt. And he was standing outside. He had a little gazebo with a stool in it and a table with fruit and snacks on it and all that.
Yeah.
And there's so much hanging around. All the Fremen are actually on the floor asleep. And
Actually asleep.
They're all in their uniforms and their costumes. And, you know, so there's hundreds of people around. It's a massive, massive production. And I spotted Christopher walking. He'd just come out of his little gazebo thing and he was standing there. So I said, I'll time this well now. I'll go up to this table where the snacks are as an excuse to try and have a chat with him. So I passed by and I said, "Hey, Chris." And he just kind of like nodded his head slightly.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't say anything. And I said, "Are you bored?" Again, he just kind of like lifted the head slightly, didn't say anything. So I said, "Fancy a chat?"
This is like, oh my God, the worst.
"Fancy a chat," I said. And he said, he looked at me then and he said, "Chat? About what?" And he turned and he went back into his little hut.
That was it.
That was it. Yeah. That's me and Christopher Walken finished.
Done.
Yeah.
Oh, you cannot blame a man for trying. We are almost at a finish, but not quite. And this is Ken Nordine, but has a slightly Christopher Walken tone.
As an intellectual vibration, smack dab in the middle of spectrum, green can be a problem. That's because there's so many different greens inside of green, and each one has a different IQ. There's the green that should never have happened. The stupid green. The green that is green with envy. Then there's the so-so green. The who cares anyway green. But somewhere in green is a green here and there that has something to say. A truly intelligent green. A green with some integrity. That's the kind of green for you and me. There's a green to be seen with. Vivid, vibrant, living alive. We should spend the better part of our time, yours and mine, with a green like this. Maybe some of it would rub off.
And that is it from this week's Playback. Thank you for listening. Talk to you next week.